This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going
to
have an effect for generations to come.
She is known around the world for her stunts, like claiming to have had sex with 1,000 men in 12 hours, constantly outraging parents, politicians, everyone else. And yet again, adult creator Bonnie Blue is making headlines in Australia. So why? G'day, it's Dave Marchese. Coming up, we're talking Bonnie Blue, how we perceive her, talk about her, and what that might reveal about society. Also coming up, Punter's politics on why he's committed to making politics accessible for you.
The humour and the gimmick and the piss take of it all hides a deep cynicism that I have because I know we have to pay attention to this for the long haul.
Yeah, that chat is coming up later. First though...
Hack.
We need empathy here if we're going to make change. We need young men to feel seen, to feel heard.
On Triple J.
Feeling pressure to be masculine is something I reckon most guys would relate to, especially when you're growing up. You feel this expectation maybe from your mates or your family or just anyone around you to behave a certain way. But is that changing? Because a new report's been looking into this, surveying hundreds of young people about their views on masculinity, and it's found teenage boys want a gender-equal world, but a lot of them are feeling trapped by this expectation to act tough. The ABC's National Social Affairs reporter, Isabella Higgins, has been looking into this and is with us now to chat about it. Isabella, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here, Dave.
What is this survey about? Like, what has it been looking into and who have they spoken to?
Well, it's really taking a deep dive, looking at the attitudes, behaviours, relationships of teenage boys and how they interact with teenage girls as well. I think this topic we've heard so much about, you know, a lot of negative press about the manosphere, men moving to the right, you know, TV series like Adolescence. And what this survey does is it kind of puts numbers to trends about how young men are feeling. And it does paint a really interesting picture that is maybe more positive than what a lot of the media coverage has suggested.
Okay, that's really interesting. As part of your reporting on this, you spoke to a couple of guys as well, Isaiah and Mikey. What did they have to tell you?
Yeah, two really interesting young men who spoke both about the enormous pressure they felt as young people to fit in because they thought that's what their friends wanted, hooking up with a lot of girls, being really strong, confident. And both of them said it took them years to kind of work through that. Isaiah said that for him, it was actually really radical when he went to university and he started making friends with girls because he'd never had female friendships before. He'd been at an all-boys school and he thought women were something of a conquest. And he said having actual real human interactions changed that.
I was a pretty insecure teenager. I was pretty afraid of rejection, not just romantically, but like on a larger scale by my peers. Being in like an all-boys school environment was usually like acts of masculinity. You know, how many girls you could meet or like how loud you could be.
Yeah, I mean, some of this perhaps isn't too surprising to a lot of young guys, but it's still really disturbing. I think like the saddest thing I found was this statistic that 43% believe a teenage boy should appear strong to others no matter what.
Yeah, and there were some other figures in there, like 44% said you had to always appear confident, 48% said that to come across as gay made you less manly. There were also some figures in there about pornography use. About 59% of young boys said they were accessing it. 1 in 10 said they'd seen explicit deepfakes. And even more said that their friends were making this kind of imagery of people that they know.
Yeah, wow.
So they're kind of some of the views that experts would consider to be harmful. So young men who hold these kind of views often, they're more likely to be violent to their partners, to talk down to them. But interestingly, they're also more likely to be the victims of bullying, violence in the home, things like that.
And these young men are feeling like there's really no option, like they just have to fit into this mould. This is what Mikey told you.
There's almost this Herculean cookie-cutter mould of what it meant to be as a man back then. I think what masculinity is turning into today, which is kind and empathetic and have really strong friendships with your male friends, to exhibit a lot of love and softness.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Isabella Higgins, the ABC's National Social Affairs reporter, about this story that she's done on masculinity off the back of this research into masculinity. And it was interesting seeing how girls reacted to some of these questions as well.
Yeah, that's right. And girls were just much less likely to believe that men should act this way. So young boys are maybe doing these things like trying to appear strong or confident to appeal to women, but the teenage girls said that they don't necessarily like that. And the young men we spoke to said that's a message they want to get across to other boys. Like, who are you doing this for? And Mikey D, the man we just spoke to, he's a DJ now. So he's out in the club scene all the time. And he says, I see older guys who've clearly had this behavior unchecked and now they're chasing women in their 20s or their 30s in the same way they did in high school. And it's gross. Women don't like it. And I see how much women don't like it.
Yeah, that is fascinating. DJ, they see a lot of things, so not too surprising.
And I guess some of the positive statistics that we should take away
from this as well. Yeah, give us some positive ones, please.
It was between 80 to 95% of young boys surveyed said they had an issue with sexual harassment or sexist jokes. The majority said that they felt like they could be emotionally open with people that they trusted. The experts we spoke to, they just said, let's start talking to each other and be open and honest with each other.
One of the people you did speak with was Matt Tyler. He's from Jesuit Social Services, which conducted this research. This is what Matt had to say.
Overwhelmingly, boys told us that they want a more gender equal world. One of the things that surprised us about this study is the number of boys who shared with us that they're really significantly influenced by their parents in terms of how they show up in the world and how they act. There's a lot of conversation about online influences, but parents as well as male friends are playing a really significant role shaping the attitudes of boys.
How do you reflect on it all, Isabella, as someone who's been talking to all these people, digging into the research? Like, were you left feeling pretty confident about the state of things for young men at the moment?
Yeah, I think so. I think we shouldn't believe all the negative things that we hear about young men today. From this, we can believe that they don't really support sexism, that they want to be more emotionally open, that they're looking for connection, that sure, there's online influences that are out there today, but young boys do want a good world and they want a good world for themselves and for their female peers.
Well, look, thank you so much for coming in and having a chat. It's a really interesting story. And like I said, you can read more on the ABC News website. Reporter Isabella Higgins, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Dave.
And we got some messages coming through. Someone says, I think these issues are also affecting boys as young as 7 and 8 years old, which is interesting. Another person says, isn't it good to have tough men in society? I do wonder why toughness gets demonised. Tough does not mean uncaring or unemotional. Another person says tough men ought to defend women, not make them a commodity or a currency. Look, I felt the most interesting part of that survey was that boys were saying we feel like we have to be tough. We can't be anything else. Not necessarily that being tough was a problem, but just that they felt that they couldn't demonstrate anything other than that amongst their peers and their family as well. All right, we've been talking about, you know, toxic behaviours, pornography as well. Here's what some people might say is a prime example of that.
Hack.
Hey, parents, that you think you've stopped me, but I'm still going to drain your son next week. I'm still going to be attending schoolies.
On Triple J.
Yeah. You may not have heard of Tia Billinger, but if I use her stage name, Bonnie Blue, there's no doubt you've seen, read, heard something about this controversial adult creator. Well, Bonnie Blue has spoken to Australian media this week, saying she's planning on heading to the Gold Coast to film during Schoolies Week, despite being banned from the country. So how's that going to work? Is she going to get in? Is all of this a giant publicity stunt? Well, Shalila Medora has been looking into it.
She's famous for her sexual stunts.
Well, I can guarantee you, your son absolutely loved it, and I've got liquid evidence of your son having a good time with me.
An adult content creator, Bonnie Blue, has her sights set on Australia again.
I think it's going to frustrate a lot of parents, so I am very excited for Schoolies. I think this is going to cause the biggest uproar this year.
That's what she said in a big interview with A Current Affair on Channel 9 this week. But there's a problem. Here's Defence Industry Minister Pat Conroy.
She currently doesn't have a visa. Ultimately, it's a call for the Home Affairs Minister.
There's a bit of a backstory here. So right now, Bonnie Blue is technically banned from Australia. Her visa was cancelled in 2024 when she tried to recruit barely legal 18-year-old men to do porn at schoolies.
I want to help celebrate you finishing school, so bring your friends.
Her visa was cancelled because she didn't have working rights in Australia. Not because of the content, by the way. She then tried her luck in Fiji to capture the schoolies crew there. That didn't work out too well either.
I got banned. I got escorted out of the country.
She reckons that isn't a problem and that she'll be back in Australia this month.
I don't want to give too much away, but let's just say I've got good lawyers and I will be doing schoolies this year.
Under Australian law, if you've had your visa cancelled, you can't re-enter the country for 3 years. To enter during that exclusion period, you need to get a waiver from the government. At this point, that seems unlikely. Bonnie doesn't seem too worried.
A good lawyer gets you a very long way, maybe even down under.
So what do sex workers in Australia think of how all this is playing out? Mish Pony is the CEO of the Australian Sex Workers Association, the Scarlet Alliance.
You know, Bonnie Blue's marketing strategy is her own. She's obviously generating a lot of media, which is potentially very good for her brand, and good luck to her.
Mish says Bonnie has a right to conduct her business as she sees fit. The real issue is the way we're talking about her.
I think that's what we need to address, the deep-rooted misogyny, whorephobia and slut-shaming that is targeted at Bonnie Blue and sex workers more broadly.
And they reckon the way we talk about Bonnie Blue influencing young, impressionable men is a bit patronising too.
Young men are adults. They do have choice and agency, and we should respect that.
Hack on Triple J.
Shalala Matora reporting there. And look, yeah, lots of opinions on Bonnie Blue. Obviously, one popular one that comes through, we really shouldn't be giving this person publicity, is someone on the text line now. I mean, it's really difficult when, you know, you've got politicians who are weighing in and speaking about it. Lots of parents, groups, having discussions about this creator. So should she be looked at as an example of female empowerment, as some say, in control of her own sexuality? Or is she actually spreading pretty dangerous messages? I'm keen to hear your thoughts on the text line 0439 757 555. To discuss it further, with me is Dr. Lexi Eichelboom, a researcher at ACU. Lexi, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What do you think it is that gets people so riled up about Bonnie Blue?
Yeah, I think there's a kind of a doublespeak happening here where she will talk a lot about her own autonomy and independence, but there are ways that she's actually restricting the conditions of consent for other women, because she promotes the stunts that she does by shaming other women for not being as available to men as she is. So underneath all of the sort of shock value and the glamour of the packaging and the vulgarity and all of that, there's actually this very old, reassuring, conservative, but also very dangerous fantasy that women's value comes from their availability to male desire, and that men are essentially entitled to women's bodies. And she uses this language that men deserve what it is that they want and that they should come to her to get what they are owed. And I think that that is quite enraging to a lot of women.
I mean, Bonnie herself argues that she's talking about consent, that she's raising discussions around boundaries with young men, and that's really important. It does sound like, though, you're saying that there is a lot of dangerous messaging as well.
Yeah, the difficulty is that consent is not something that happens in a vacuum. There are other pressures that work on the mind before two people even come into the room together, where women can feel pressured to behave in certain ways, to give things that maybe their partner wants, but that they don't want to do because they are concerned that maybe their partner will go somewhere else, or that they will be a bad woman if they don't do this. And Bonnie Blue is reinforcing those sorts of messages that actually can really work to compromise consent.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Dr. Lexi Eichelboom, a researcher at the Australian Catholic University, and we're talking about Bonnie Blue, all this talk about her after she gave a big interview with Australian media, Channel 9, this week and promised to be at schoolies later this month. Got messages coming through on the text line now. Someone says Bonnie Blue should not be allowed in the country. Another person says Bonnie Blue's behaviour is predatory and creepy, coming from a female sex-positive feminist. Another person, I just want to say, what would happen if this was a guy doing this to women? And then we've got other people on the text line saying, let her in. I've got no issue with this whatsoever. Lexi, I mean, we've heard sex workers just a few minutes ago say there is a lot of misogyny directed at Bonnie Blue. Do you think that is a big issue as well?
I think that there is misogyny that Bonnie Blue herself is directing towards other women. And she has the right to do with her body what she wants. And she also has the right to engage in sex work. But this is also a complicated sort of business model that she has, in which she is sort of preying on complicated emotions in other people in order to make money in ways that she's not just sort of, you know, using her body to make money, but also selling a larger fantasy that's bigger than just her as a person. And I think it's important that we hold not only men, but also women responsible for the sorts of things that they do in the world without that having to be misogyny or hatred of women generally.
We've got a lot more messages coming through. Someone says, you know who has choice and agency? The immigration department is that person's message there. Another person says, if she wants to come to Australia to have sex with people, then let her. There's nothing wrong with that. Someone else, though, says the double standards are real. If men her age targeted 18-year-old women to recruit them for porn, they'd be called out for predatory behaviour. I'm speaking with Dr. Lexi Eichelboom about Bonnie Blue being in the media this week, promising to come to schoolies. Lexi, you've written about this conflict people feel towards her, that on one hand she says she's empowered, autonomous with her sexuality, on the other people think she is predatory and harmful, and we're seeing a lot of those messages come through on our text line now. You've written about whether she's seen as a feminist or a monster. Do you have an answer at the end of that?
Yeah, my answer is that I think we should see her as neither. So, you know, this goes to the misogyny comment where I don't want to sort of do too much to demonize her as an individual, because she is making the choices that she is making also within a system that is rigged against women. And so to win in that system, there are certain sorts of pathways that are currently available that make becoming somebody like Bonnie Blue an understandable choice for a woman. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it is a good choice, because it might involve betraying other women like she is doing and subservience to male values. But the issue here is bigger than Bonnie Blue. It's about the system that sort of can push women into these sorts of choices that are not necessarily good for them or for all women at the end of the day.
Well, look, thank you very much for your analysis. A lot of people have been loving it, Dr. Lexi Eichelboom. So appreciate you coming on and making time for us. Thanks for coming on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
And more messages. Scotty from Dubbo says, I see this as no different to toolies heading up to schoolies to prey on school leavers. Interesting point from Scotty there. And another person says, if Bonnie Blue were a male adult star wanting to sleep with barely adult women, there would be a different narrative here. These young men are 18. They're also impressionable teenagers.
Hack.
We should be making decisions that are good for Australians and not just people who can pay to sit at a table with a minister or prime minister.
On Triple J.
What do you think about rich people, corporations, big business paying to access our politicians? Because it happens all the time at big fancy fundraisers. It means that if you do have a bit of money behind you, you can effectively buy your way into a chat with our country's decision makers. Well, someone who's outraged by this and trying to change it is Conrad Benjamin, a guy you may know as Punters Politics. He describes himself as being issues-focused, not aligned with any particular political party, and he's got a really interesting story. He went from being a high school teacher to one of the most influential political commentators in the country. So how? Well, let's ask him. Punters Politics, welcome to Hack.
Oi, punters, great to be here.
It's good to have you on. I mean, what makes you so wound up about the influence of lobbyists in particular in this country?
Oh, mate, I think it's looking at the political system that is just broken and not working and not fixing anything. And at the end of the day, the roads all lead back to corporate capture of our politicians in a few different key ways. That's what's clogging the wheels, stopping solutions to the housing crisis, to our minerals resources being given away for free. There is corporate influence just clogging up and distracting our politicians and pulling them away from serving we the punters.
You've been talking about this for quite a while, like long before the election, during the campaign you were talking about it. Were you expecting the kind of response from your listeners, your audience?
Well, I mean, initially, no. When I have these political conversations with my mates, they're always like, oh, right, yeah, right, mate, yeah, but what are you going to do? And it felt dismissive, and I think a lot of people kind of feel that because we all feel a little helpless, and in those conversations when you talk politics, you're thinking, well, what am I going to do about it? It's so big and it doesn't matter. And then I started posting some Instagram reels that explained some simple things. Obviously, we're giving away $100 billion worth of gas for free to foreign corporations every year. I made that reel and it blew up, and I have been kind of shocked and given a lot of hope with when we're talking about what's important about politics, about the issues that 95% of us all agree on that we could solve right now and make everybody's life measurably better. We actually care, and Aussies actually tune in.
So you're in Canberra at the moment. You held this big fundraiser this week. Can you explain what that was about?
Well, we just had the first inaugural Punters Politics Political Fundraiser where we gave regular Aussie punters in person and on the live stream the opportunity to pay cash to access their politicians. This is a practice that I discovered is very common. In Canberra, they call it politics. They call it business as usual. But most Aussie punters, polling just come out of YouGov, 6 out of 10 Aussie punters, they don't call it politics, they call it corrupt. Only 1 in 10 Aussie punters wouldn't call it corrupt, and 7 out of 10 Aussie punters want politicians to stop it.
So you had this idea of putting on this big gala event, political fundraiser, where people could what, pay to access politicians in a legitimate way?
Yeah, so how it normally works is there's a hotel, which we had it at, the QT Hotel in Canberra, where these events happen. And normally a group of vested interests, some corporations, some lobbyists, they'd be part of the Federal Labor Business Forum or the Business Forum for the Liberal Party. They'd spend a membership fee of a couple thousand dollars. Then they have these events and they can buy tickets for up to $15,000 to $20,000 to be in the same room, to be at the same dinner table. And you just get to lobby and chat to them. You get to buy access. And so I thought, why not? Well, if democracy's for sale, let's give it a crack. So I rounded up as many politicians as I could get. I put some tickets on the website, punterspolitics.com, and the tickets were up for $15,000, which is standard for this sort of event. But I gave a discount code of 99.5% to the regular punters out there who listen. So it came to about $50 to $100. You could choose your price there. And I just wanted to let everyone know this is how it works and give regular Aussie punters a shot.
And who were the politicians that were there?
So we had, surprise, surprise, no one from Labor or Liberal wanted to come. The invite was open. I hit up as many as I could. A lot of independent senators managed to come. Politician David Pocock, Helen Haynes, and surprisingly, Bridget McKenzie from the Nationals rocked up and we had a nice lively discussion.
I mean, there's a bit of comedic value here, obviously. Some of it's kind of lighthearted, but it does go to this really serious issue that you're shining a light on. I mean, does pulling off something like this, an event like this, make you more optimistic about where politics is going and the prospect of changing things?
I think the humour and the gimmick and the piss take of it all hides a deep cynicism that I have because I know we have to pay attention to this for the long haul. Like, Labor have power right now. They can do whatever the hell they want right now, but they won't, and they're not doing anything about it. They know this is a problem, but they benefit from it because they're in the game of power. If the Liberal Party were in, they'd be in the same situation. So I have this deep cynicism, but I also see how close we are to making change. Like it would just take one government to pass one bill to stop this very obvious practice, which regular Aussie punters, they call it corruption. Like if politicians were talking to voters and they tell them what they're doing, the regular Aussie punter's reaction is, well, cash for access, that sounds corrupt, but because it's legal and business as usual. So it's a bit cynical and it's a bit of a piss take because I want people to pay attention for the long haul. And if I can make it as fun and engaging as possible, we can all have a good time whilst applying consistent pressure that's needed. It can't just be one fun event.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese, speaking with podcaster, political commentator Conrad Benjamin, or Punters Politics, as you might know him. Hearing from you on the text line, someone says, I hate the notion of cash for access. Another person just says, good to hear your voice and thoughts on the radio punt. Keep it up. Conrad, I want to turn the focus to you now, because I do feel like people are really interested in you as a person, as someone who really is in the limelight at the moment, and people look up to you and respect your opinion. What made you decide to get into this kind of content? Because you were a teacher originally, right?
Yeah, the moment that radicalized me was when I was standing teaching economics in front of my year 10 students, and I opened the textbook, and in the textbook, they had Australia's rankings for clean air, clean water, freedom of the press, you know, how well we've been doing. And the textbook was a bit out of date. And I was like, all right, kids, let's see how we've been doing on all these metrics. Make a report card for the politician to see if have we been improving or going backwards. And a student raises his hand and goes, sir, do they know we're going backwards on freedom of the press, on transparency in government? Do they know this? And I just go home and I emailed my MP. This is the moment where I was just like, what do you want me to tell them? Do you want me to be honest with these kids that I'm teaching and say, you know, this is happening, you know? And I got some lackluster response. And I think that was the moment where I was like, politics is more simple than we're taught it is. We agree on far more things than the political conversation will have us, you know, we just focus on what we disagree with. We're just trying to take back the political conversation.
So you started making some content, and then obviously some of it has done really well. And was that it? It just took off and it was out of your control. All of a sudden you're a political commentator with thousands and thousands of followers.
Yeah, I think so. I think I was just genuinely shocked at just how much people cared about this and how much it resonated with. We're always told Aussies don't care about politics, especially Aussie blokes, which is most of my audience. We're told that we're the shilby, right? Yeah, well, we can just go to the beach and have a surf. It's all right. Like, no worries. But when I made a few of those Instagram reels and I started communicating just the important stuff that we all agree on with the simple solutions, it just blew up and took off. And I went from like 1,000 followers to 500,000 within a year and a half. And I think this is what we care about. We can go back to arguing about the trivial things around the edges that we always argue about, but we can fix the very fabric of our democracy so that it starts to function for us more and not just large corporations.
So you think, you know, young Australians in particular are thirsty for more political discussion and analysis, and some of the commentary we might have been hearing for years about young people being disengaged and disillusioned and just tuning out, you don't subscribe to that?
Yeah, I think sadly we have no choice. If I look at my audience, the things I'm talking about are so applicable to everyone's life. You know, I would teach these kids in high school. Within 4 years, they're at university, good on them, having a good time. Don't worry about politics. You shouldn't have to. Then they finish, get a job, go to buy a house and realize this system is cooked and it's broken. And the only solution is a political solution that puts the vested interests on the back seat and stops looking after profits for the property industry and the banks and starts looking out for houses for young people. And so they have no choice to kind of get involved. And I think when they see important conversations that cut to the core of what can help fix this, they see the simplicity, they see the importance, and they have no choice but to kind of get involved.
I know you get asked about this all the time in terms of new media versus traditional media, and you're probably sick of like answering those questions. But I am interested to know, like, do you think that people are going to continue to see political commentary discussion from creators like yourself seek that out as opposed to getting it from traditional media sources? Like, how do you think that's going to play out in the years ahead?
Yeah, I think it's going to diversify, and I think both are going to continue. I just think traditional media has been so slow, and still to this very day, so slow to learn the lessons that I'm teaching them every single day. I think I offer a level of authenticity and a level of honesty that I think we're looking for in our traditional media. And there's good journalism happening, but then it gets overshadowed by the absolute trash that the corporate media will put forward when they're running a news piece that's an advertorial, but masquerading as a news, and we just kind of lose faith in it. And so I think corporate media just needs to pivot quick. And I think they will. I think they'll be around for a while, and I think both will exist, but they're just going to have increased competition from a more diverse set of online creators who can pick up a phone and also do some analysis themselves.
Do you feel pressure to keep this up? Like, is there ever days that you wake up and you're like, actually, I'm over this, and I'd like to just go back to my normal job and give all this up?
Well, listen, teaching as a normal job is a pretty hard bloody slog, so it's going to take a few years for me to want to willingly return to there. As fun as teaching some kinds of handbag, but it's pretty hard. I do feel the pressure to keep doing this for the long haul because I want to see big systemic change. So I do feel that pressure, and I think some days it weighs on me, but I think I'm just too wired to wanting to help that. I'll just, you know, go for a surf and go for a ride and then come back to it, take a day or so off and then just get back into the grind of consuming the world's problems and trying to communicate simple solutions to them.
You're definitely in it for now, and there's a lot of people who are chasing you and relying on you for a lot of information. Look, Conrad Benjamin, Punters Politics, appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And so many people really loving that chat. If you want the full interview, it's up on the Hack podcast now. You can go find it there. We discuss a whole bunch of other stuff that we couldn't include there. Some other comments coming through. Someone says pay for access is totally corruption, absolute garbage. Another person says a $15,000 ticket isn't even a rounding error in a multi-million dollar company's budget. And someone else just says, yeah, I want more discussion and movement in this space. All right, that's all for Hack for now. Hack.